Hello everyone, this is Mustar FM 89.6. This is Manuel, and with me I have Samantha.
Hello, Manuel.
Hello, how are you?
I'm really fine, and you?
Oh, thank you that you ask. I'm fine too.
So we're gathered here today to talk about alcohol in different countries. But what do we want to talk about? So, to explain how we came to this, we had a training in Budapest, and we met a lot of different people from a lot of different countries, where we had to do workshops about, you know, getting to know each other and how we were supposed to interact together, having different cultures. And we also had a lot of free time. And one of the first things that we did was having a cultural night. We're looking for products in Budapest that came from our home countries, whether that was food or drinks. And one of the most popular thing was alcohol. Some people bought cheese, some people bought ham, some people bought snacks. But one of the biggest thing that there was alcohol. And so we were wondering after that, how big is the place of alcohol in every different culture? So we wanted to talk about it and see if there was an actual real problem that was common to everyone in the world or not. So first of all, Samantha, what can you tell us about alcohol habits in the different cultures? What have you found?
I have found a lot of information about it, and it's very interesting that every culture have their own habits about the alcohol. But let's talk about the drinking cultures around the world. Alcohol is a fundamental part of socializing in many countries, as we know. Drinking together can create bonds between co-workers, provide a chance to show respect for elders, and even start business meetings in some countries. But how and when alcohol should be consumed can vary from country to country. Different cultures have important rules, traditions, and customs that reveal interesting things about them and are useful to know if you are planning to visit different countries. Let's talk a little bit about history of alcohol in different countries, some interesting facts about it. Alcohol has played a central role in almost all human cultures. Neolithic times, all societies without exceptions make use of alcohol, being by far the most common. There is a convincing evidence that the development of agriculture, regarded as the foundation of civilization, was based on the cultivation agreeing for beer as much as for bread. From the earliest recorded use of alcohol, drinking has been a social activity, and both consumption and behavior have been subject to self-imposed social controls. Attempts at prohibition have never been successful, except when couched in terms of sacred rules in high religious cultures, as we know, like in Arabic countries now. And let's talk also about the behavioral effects of the alcohol in different countries. There is enormous cross-cultural variation in the way people behave when they drink. In some societies, such as the UK, Scandinavia, USA, and Australia, alcohol is associated with violent and antisocial behavior, while in others, such as Mediterranean and some South American cultures, drinking behavior is largely peaceful and harmonious. The variation can be attributed to different levels of consumption of genetic differences, but is clearly related to different cultural beliefs about alcohol, expectations regarding the effects of alcohol, and social norms regarding drunken component. The findings of both cross-cultural research and controlled experiments indicate that the effects of alcohol on behavior are primarily determined by social and cultural factors, rather than the chemical actions of ethanol. And also let's talk about rules and regulation of alcohol in different cultures. I have learned that in all cultures, drinking is a rule-governed activity hedged about with self-imposed norms and regulations concerning who may drink, how much, or what, when, how, in what context, etc. Rules which are often the focus on strong emotions. Also, variation in these rules and norms reflect the characteristics, values, attitudes, and beliefs of different cultures. There are significant cross-cultural similarities or constants in the unwritten rules governing alcohol use. Analysis of cross-cultural research reveals four near-universal constants. There are four of them. The first one is prescription of solitary drinking, prescription of sociability, social control of consumption behavior, and the last one, restrictions on female and underage drinking that was in the past, for example. Research findings indicate that these rules and the self-imposed protocols of drinking rituals have more influence on both levels of consumption and drinking behavior than external or legal controls. The literature to date offers no satisfactory explanation for the near universality of restrictions on female drinking, as all researchers have attempted to explain this is in purely cultural terms. We suggest that re-prevalence of such restrictions may be due to non-cultural factors such as differences in male and female psychology, resulting in more pronounced effects of alcohol on females. While all contemporary cultures impose some restrictions of drinking, both the definitions of restrictions or the nature of the restrictions vary widely, with more rigid restrictions in ambivalent drinking cultures and more promising approach in integrated drinking cultures. And also there are some symbolic functions of drinking in different cultures. In all societies, alcoholic beverages are used as powerful symbolic tools to construct and manipulate the social world. Cross-cultural research reveals four main symbolic uses of alcoholic beverages. The first one, as labels defining the nature of social situations or events. The second one, as indicators of social status. The third one, as statements of affiliation. And the last one, as gender differentiators. There is convincing historical and contemporary evidence to show that the adoption of foreign drinks often involves the adoption of the drinking patterns, attitudes, and behaviors of the alien culture. This has nothing to do with any intrinsic properties of the beverage themselves. Beer, for example, may be associated with a disorderly behavior in some cultures or subcultures and with benign sociability in others. In Europe, the influence of some ambivalent northern beer drinking cultures on integrated southern wine drinking cultures is increasing and associated with potentially detrimental changes in attitudes and behavior. Historical evidence suggests that attempts to curb that antisocial excesses associated with the alien beverage through draconian restrictions on alcohol per se may result in the association of such behavior with the formerly benign native beverage and the overall increase in alcohol-related problems. Some societies appear less susceptible to the cultural influence of alien beverages than others. Also, the current convergence of drinking patterns also involves increasing consumption of wine in formerly beer or spirits-dominated cultures. This has so far not been accompanied by an adoption of more behavior and attitudes associated with the wine-drinking cultures. And also, there are some differences in cultures about drinking places. Drinking is, in all cultures, essential as social activity, and most societies have specific, designed environments for communal drinking. Cross-cultural differences in this physical nature of public drinking places reflect different attitudes toward alcohol. Positive, integrated non-temperature cultures tend to favor more open drinking environments, while negative cultures are associated with closed insular designs. Research also reveals significant cross-cultural similarities of constants. The first one is that in all cultures, the drinking place is a special environment, a separate social world with its own customs and values. Drinking places tend to be socially integrative environments. And the last one is that the primary function of drinking places is the facilitation of social bonding. And also, let's talk about drinking times in different cultures. Acceptable times for drinking also vary around the world. Brits tend to think that it's a bit odd to start drinking before midday and often confine their alcoholic beverages to the evening. Other countries like Ireland and the Czech Republic follow a similar pattern. Icelandic drinkers stay out late, with nights out regularly not standing until after midnight. Other cultures are more accepting of daytime drinking. In Spain, France, Russia, and Germany, it's not unusual to have alcoholic beverages with lunch. It's also a tradition in Germany to go for a drink on Sunday mornings. This stems from a time when families used to gather in the pub after Sunday morning's church services. It's important to remember that in countries where daytime drinking is common, this drinking is still limited rather than heavy sessions which might be more common at the weekend, for example, in the UK. Let's talk also about interesting habits that people have in their countries in drinking process. For example, in Russia, when we say cheers, we say «на здоровье», and we have some interesting habits. For example, after the cheering, you can't put your glass on the table because it's very bad superstition that you will be unlucky after that. And also, we have the game. It was in cultural event with the vodka. When people need to close their eyes, just turning around and to find with a person with whom he will drink. Because for us in Russia, it's very important to drink not alone. Because only in company, in big companies, in bars, in events, so it's very important.
We have similar habits, like when we say cheers and we knock our glasses together, there's a thing where we can't cross our arms. Like if four people are knocking their beers together and they can't cross arms, like you have to wait until everyone does it, because then it's bad luck as well.
Mm.
All these habits are really part of a social system. You know, you don't have really habits for drinking alone. It's really because it's always in a social place that you do these kind of things. It's the same when you also knock your beers together. You also have to look each other in the eyes, that kind of thing. It's really about the moment and the people that you're with, because a lot of data I found also means that, we're going to talk about it more later, but the image of the alcoholic person that it's sitting alone in their apartment isn't the worst type of alcoholism. It's like less than 10% of people, because drinking is mostly a social, like you said, activity involving a lot of people.
Yeah, and also it's very important to finish the drink after a toast. If you don't, people might think that you disagreed with what was said in Russia. So let's move to other countries also. Oh, France, I see France. Oh my God, so it's true that you need to look at eyes when you're drinking to another person, but it can be uncomfortable.
Not when you're drinking the whole time, just after. It's like, you're just looking, no. It's really just the moment when you say cheers.
Mm.
Yeah, just at the exact moment, less than a second.
But if there will be a lot of people, you need to look at everyone eyes?
Because everyone does it with everyone, yeah.
Mm. Okay.
There's really the moment where everyone does it at the same, it doesn't really happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's always like two people,
mm-hmm,
and you
mm-hmm.
go around the table doing it with everyone.
But it depends. If you are like 20, you just do
cheer. Yeah, just
and
raise your glass in the air
at
and that's
eyes?
It.
No.
The only
you just look at everyone and
just don't
cheers.
Cross.
In
that's
general,
all.
Okay. And you can't also add ice to your wine. Why?
No
one does
that.
No.
It's like putting the red wine in the fridge. Like, you can't do that.
But some people, like in Spain and stuff, they put soda with wine.
And also here in Hungary, they like soda with wine.
This is so weird for me.
Yes?
Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah, there is a special cocktail in Spain that it's called Calimucho, and it's coca with red wine.
And how will be cheers in French?
Santé. So it's really funny that you mentioned that you get accustomed to vodka really easily in Russia, because I have a map, interactive map, that shows the different type of alcohol that each country drinks, and analyzed as a way to see what kind of cultural habits there are. So for example, between wine, beer, and spirits meaning vodka. Palinka, all these kind of hard alcohol. In Russia, what do you think is the biggest? I think you know. Which type of alcohol do they consume the most?
Vodka. Because when you are going to the market, supermarket in Russia, it's like a lot of shelves of vodka. Maybe the same with wine in France, but we don't have a lot of wine, but we have a lot of vodka.
But how much of vodka or spirits does like the average person aged of 15 or plus, 15-year-olds or plus, drink per week? How much vodka per week do you think?
Let me think. Maybe 2 liters.
2 liters per week at 15?
15?
No, 15 or more.
15?
Starting 15 years old, yeah.
Ah, okay.
15 or 30. Okay. It's just starting from 15-year-old.
2 liters?
No. The average person drinks 6 shots of vodka per week.
6 shots of 2 centiliters or 3? So
that means 200, oh no, around 300 millimeters of...
So it's not a lot.
Shots of 300 millimeters?
No, totally. The 6 shots mean 300 millimeters of
it's
vodka.
It's a little.
Yes.
I'm surprised. I was expecting 2 liters of vodka.
Thomas, what do you think about France between wine, beer, and spirits?
But we can't compare it because it's like...
No, there's data. Which do you think the average person drinks every week? Which one between beer, wine, and spirits do you think the average person drinks the most every week?
I would say beer, then wine.
No, it's wine. And do you know how many glasses of wine every week?
4 glasses a week?
7.
10. Which is the second one, do you think?
Beer, for sure.
Vodka.
It's 1.5 pint of beer or 3 shots of spirits. So that can be vodka, whiskey. What do you think about the USA?
Beer, for sure.
I would say whiskey.
Beer. It's around 3 pints, around 3 shots, and around 2 glasses of wine. What about Hungary? What do you think is the thing they drink the most?
Wine? Oh, no, palinka, of course,
no,
palinka.
I would say beer for sure. It's so cheap.
Palinka also cheap. And wine's so cheap.
You're both wrong. It's wine. The average person drinks 5 glasses of wine, 3 pints of beer, or 4 shots of spirits. What about Japan?
Sake.
No, beer.
She wins.
Okay.
It's spirits. 4 shots of spirits, 1 pint of beer, and 1/2 glass of wine. You have to find another country. I have one right here that is heavy on drinking wine. It's a country that was in one of the last football World Cup.
Spain.
No.
Portugal.
France.
No. The country that has one of the best players in the world, if not
England?
The best. No.
Sweden.
No.
Argentina.
Yes.
Yes, of course, Messi.
They drink 6 glasses of wine every week. And one last one. Which one do you think between England, like, or the United Kingdom as a whole, and Ireland drinks the most?
Ireland.
England.
It's actually pretty close because the UK drinks more wine, but Ireland drinks more beer. So moving on from this, I have a list of all of the different kind of alcohol that every country drinks. And this is closely associated to the different kind of habits that people have in their culture in different countries. Have you heard of any of these? You just say yes or no. I'm going to give you a country and you're going to tell me which one is supposed to be their special alcohol. Mexico.
Tequila.
Yes. Spain.
Wine.
No.
Sangria. No.
Sangria.
Okay.
Yes, sangria. Jamaica.
Rum.
Yeah. Russia.
Vodka.
Are you sure?
Wine.
Настойка.
No, it was vodka. What about France?
Wine.
Trick question.
Champagne.
No.
Beer. Spirits.
Pastis. This tastes really bad. Yes.
Yeah, terrible.
But we've talked about a lot of things. Alcohol habits, different kind of alcohol. But did you know that a lot of countries have prohibited alcohol?
Yeah, of course. I can imagine.
Yeah. Most of them, it's linked to religion. For example, in Yemen. For example, Yemenis are not allowed to consume alcohol in the country, and the sale is also illegal everywhere, except in Aden and Sana'a, where the drink are sold only to restaurants with a permit.
I've seen there is also Mauritania, I think, without alcohol.
Yes, you're right. In Mauritania, Muslim people are forbidden from even owning alcohol or consuming, selling, producing really everything. But non-Muslim people are actually allowed to consume in their homes or in places like restaurants where it's allowed. There's also
Arabia Saudia, I think.
Saudi Arabia, yes. Where it is completely banned. Same, you have no right to produce, import, sell, or consume in the country anything. In airports, they check your bags thoroughly to make sure you don't bring alcohol with you. And there is a really harsh punishment against those who are caught selling or drinking in public, such as long-term imprisonment or flogging. But there are also other countries like the United Arab Emirates, Sudan, Somalia, Pakistan, Libya, Kuwait, Iran, India, Brunei.
Most of the country are Muslims country, that's why, I guess.
Yeah, probably. We can see that even in the way we're talking about alcohol right now, there's really this, we're really at ease, you know, talking about it. It's very included in our lifestyle, you know, to drink alcohol, each and every one of us here. To people that either don't drink for religious reasons or just by personal conviction, but a lot of us do. And this shows that really drinking is a really big phenomenon, and it has, like everyone knows, big problem that can lead to addiction. A lot of people fall into alcoholism, and there's actually a lot more people than we think, because like I mentioned before, when we think of alcoholism, we think about the lonely person in their apartment or house drinking alone. But it's actually just a really small part of people who have a drinking problem. For example, it is considered to be a drinking problem because alcoholism is a chronic yet common medical disorder that afflicts millions of people all over the world. The term alcoholism is actually a mainstream expression used to describe a disease known medically as alcohol use disorder. This disorder is characterized by the abuse of and dependency of alcohol. According to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, a person may be diagnosed with alcohol dependency disorder if they exhibit any two of the following symptoms within a 12-month period. For example, if you've gotten more than once in situations while or after drinking that increased your chance of getting hurt, such as driving, swimming, using machinery, walking in a dangerous area, or having unprotected sex as well. Or if you continued to drink even though it was making you feel depressed or anxious, or adding to another health problem, maybe even having memory blackout. Or also if you had to drink much more than you used to get the same effect, that you started to see that you had a resistance to alcohol, that maybe at some point two glasses of wine were enough, but now you need a whole bottle. Or also if you found that when the effects of alcohol were wearing off, you had some kind of withdrawal syndromes, such as trouble sleeping, shakiness, restlessness, nausea, sweating, a racing heart, or even seizure. Alcohol dependency disorder has multiple levels of severity, which generally depend upon the number of symptoms expressed by a given patient. Two or three different symptoms is mild, four to five is moderate, and six or more is considered severe, because there's a lot more different symptoms that you can express other than the ones I told you about. Treatment for alcohol dependency disorder includes counseling, medication, and possibly medically assisted detoxification to help the individual safety, to help someone safely stop drinking. For just to give you an idea, at a societal level, the European Union is the heaviest drinking region in the world, with over one-fifth of the European population aged 15 years or above reporting heavy episodic drinking when you get five or more drinks on an occasion, or around 60 grams of alcohol, at least once a week. Heavy episodic drinking is widespread across all ages in all of Europe, and not only among young people or those from Northern Europe. But the frequency of alcoholism varies significantly from one nation to the next, although, you know, we have this data about globally in Europe. Even between the different European countries, there are differences, and even with the rest of the world also, of course. And while it might stand to reason that rates of alcoholism would correlate closely to overall alcohol consumption per country, or even with the drinking age by country, this is not necessarily true. For example, although consumption varies by state, Americans on average consume 8.7 liters of pure alcohol annually, which is the equivalent of drinking 29 handles of vodka per person per year. 29 handle mean around 50 liters of pure alcohol per year for one person. This means that the US, for example, despite being 7th on the list of countries with the highest rates of alcoholism, is only 38th on the list of countries with the highest alcohol consumption per person. What do you think is the top country in terms of alcoholism? Which country suffers the most from alcoholism, in your opinion?
Russia.
No, I think it's Hungary.
One of them is the first, one of them is the second.
First Russia, the second Hungary.
No, first Hungary for sure.
First Hungary and then Russia. 21, it's really close. I mean, it's not, but Hungary has 21.2%, yes,
of
people suffering from alcoholism, and Russia has 20.9%, so it's almost the same. Which do you think, which other countries are also on this, on the top 10?
Belarus.
Third one, yes.
England.
Okay, no.
No, not England.
Or Latvia.
Latvia, yes, is the fourth one.
Yeah, and Belarus also.
Belarus is the third one, Latvia is the fourth one.
And I think that the East Europe, yeah, it's like maybe Poland, Slovakia, Czech Republic, maybe.
Poland and Slovakia are 8th and 10th, mm-hmm. respectively, but there's also South Korea, which is 5th. It has a rate of alcoholism of 13.9%.
And Japan? No?
Nope. But there's also even more information for Hungary. For example, the type of people that suffer the most, for example, if we divide it by gender, 36.9% of men suffer from alcoholism, where it's only 7.2% of women. This illustrates kind of a common trend that is true in a lot of countries. Males tend to exceed females in both alcoholism and overall alcohol consumption by a lot. So if we look at it this way, for women, which are the top countries? If you divide it in gender, mm-hmm. if you take into account only women, which do you think is the worst country in terms of alcoholism?
I think countries where the wine is very popular, like Italy, France, Spain, maybe, and Hungary.
Hungary is the fourth one.
I think where is the wine is more popular?
I would say United States.
Yes.
Okay.
It's the first one. 10%. 10.4% of women in the United States suffer from alcoholism. Second one is Russia, 7.4. Then Sweden, 7.3.
Oh.
Yes. Hungary, South Korea, Belarus, Austria, United Kingdom, Latvia, Slovenia. And for men, what do you think it is?
Russia?
Yes. I mean, for men, it's almost the same as the...
Mm-hmm. The total.
As the total one, yes. Discussed. It's Russia, Hungary, Belarus, Latvia, Slovenia, Slovakia, Poland, Estonia, South Korea, Lithuania.
Europe.
Yeah.
I'm surprised because I was thinking... But we are talking about alcoholism. Yes. Not consumption.
No, this was about... Yeah. Yes. In we talked case, about consumption before. Mm. Now this was just...
Yeah. In this case, I understand.
Yes. But like I mentioned... We, even us, when we talk about it, you know, we have fun talking about alcohol in private, for example, but it shows a lot of different problems. We don't necessarily take it very seriously when we really should. I have an article right now that is, you know, talking about which countries have the worst drinking cultures, but even there, you know, they give us numbers. For example, I have this article talking about which countries have the worst drinking cultures, and there, you know, you have quotes about the different, like, people giving quotes about how they see the drinking culture in their country. For example, when they talk about Australia, one person said, a 44-year-old said, that binge drinking is glorified in Australia, and the focus is not on drinking in moderation or for enjoyment. For example, in South Africa, someone said that it is varied, but most people drink socially, not generally to excess, but responsible drinking. Not drinking and driving, for example, because it's very rare. It really depends on the habits and the culture, like the when you mentioned it earlier. In the Philippines, for example, some person said that once a bottle is opened, it must be finished. It's never closed while still full. I think 14 grams a day for women seems reasonable, but 28 grams a day for a man seems a little high. However, I have never seen these guidelines published or talked about anywhere in this country. So that means, you know, a lot of people are not even aware of that there's a problem in the way they consume alcohol, because nobody talks about it. It's just something accepted by everyone. One that's very striking is a quote from the UK saying that in the UK, the notion of enjoying yourself in the evening without alcohol is so unusual that it can lead to you being called a freak, or at least miserable and antisocial. Whereas drinking yourself insensible is not only acceptable, it is admired. Unfortunately, all advice given seems to be decided upon somewhat arbitrarily, and although most doctors agree alcohol is bad for you, limits seem to be plucked out of the air with no real evidential statistics. So, you know, we all have this idea of England and English people drinking a lot, and this seems to be somewhat true. This is someone talking from what they perceive living there. We also know that alcoholism, while causing a lot of accidents or encouraging you to go through with really dangerous tasks or activities, can also just be bad for your body. You know, we know that it is closely linked to heart problems, but also liver problems. And it also affects a population's life expectancy. For example, I have a graph right here that compares the consumption of alcohol with the life expectancy of the biggest country by GDP. So for example, which country do you think has the highest consumption, but also the highest life expectancy?
Spain? France?
It's France, because we have an alcohol consumption of 11.8 liters of pure alcohol, but we also have a life expectancy of around 82 years old. Which do you think has the least average liters of pure alcohol consumed, but also the least life expectancy?
Country in Africa?
It's India. They consume around 2.2 liters of pure alcohol, but they have a life expectancy of 68 or 69 years. But it really depends, because, for example, Russia, which is the second, if you look at Russia, it has the second lowest life expectancy out of the top countries, which drink the most. It's the second one that drinks the most liters of pure alcohol, but it's also the second worst one in terms of life expectancy. They have a life expectancy of around 70 years old, and they drink 11.5 liters of pure alcohol.
So it's like the first France, the second Russia, but Russia.
There's a big difference between the two, yes.
And what about Spain?
Spain is not on the graph because it's not part of the top countries by GDP. There's a lot more data talking even in more depth about how much every country drinks of pure alcohol, how much different types of alcohol they drink, what it means for the population's life expectancy, how much years of life are lost due to alcohol consumption as well. For example, in Belarus, it's 14 years are lost of life because of how much they drink. There's also data about the riskiest patterns of drinking because of what they drink, because they drink mostly spirits and really heavy drinking, and because of how they decide to drink. You know, binge drinking is also very popular there, which is one of the riskiest patterns because it can cause a lot of different problems. The conclusion of all this data is that it's not very positive. Although there are some small data saying that some alcohol can be good for you in a very small portion, for example with wine, it's very hard to stop at just one glass, and it's really easy to develop some kind of dependency or habit that actually doesn't benefit you at all. So the conclusion of this is that generally, and even in a lot of cases, in most cases, is that alcohol will cause you to lower your life expectancy, lose years of life, and cause you problems that will be with you until you die. And this is very, very hard. And we know that this is something that will continue on because alcohol is so popular everywhere around the world. It's a lot of people don't see it that way, but it's a drug. You know, it's similar to a lot of people don't see it that way, but it's very similar to drugs and the effects that it has on our body and, you know, our way of thinking. This is going to continue to be a problem even for our children, because this is a problem now for us. It was also before because we didn't know better. But even now that we know better, you know, because we have statistics, not like they could have a century ago. Now we have statistics. It doesn't stop us from continuing drinking the way we do now. And I don't think it's going to stop. And so what can you tell us about alcoholism in children now? But there's also a very big problem, because we've talked about all the different problems of alcoholism and how it can really, that it will stay with you until you die and until you're old. You know, you'll have problems, but you can also face a lot of problems with alcoholism when you're very young. And so Thomas, what can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I will talk about alcoholism in children. I think this topic is really interesting because a lot of children suffer from alcoholism. So, For example, having a parent that suffers from alcohol abuse issues may deeply and profoundly impact your development and overall life. As a result of your parents' alcohol misuse, you may have experiencing a long-lasting problems that have persisted into adulthood. Surviving a chaotic, dysfunctional environment as a child or growing up in the alcoholic home can lead to the development of certain maladaptive characteristics. This maladaptation can lead to issues in relationships and negatively affect your psychological well-being. Let's talk about an overview of the alcoholic home. Growing up in an alcoholic home can be unpredictable. A parent's problematic drinking behavior can have a gradual or cumulative impact on the child's development. While each family touched by alcohol abuse is unique, one clinician asserts that there are certain rules of behavior and beliefs that members in alcoholic homes may adhere to. Family containing one or multiple alcoholic members may display certain behaviors and patterns which can be transmitted to children in various spoken and unspoken ways. Again, though each family is somewhat unique, you may recognize some of these rules of an alcoholic home in your own life, including avoid talking about family problems with anyone. Growing up in alcoholic home may have led you to learn that it's unacceptable to discuss your feelings, concerns, or problems, and that issues must stay within the family. Also, not expressing your feelings openly. In a family with a parent suffering from alcoholism, your feelings may not have received validation, or you may have never been able to talk about your feelings with your family members. Limit your communication with others. Your environment was unpredictable, and so you never knew whether you would receive a positive or negative response that would come with a positive or negative consequences. Therefore, you were expected to keep your communication to a minimum. Nothing you do is good enough, but we expect you to be perfect anyway. Children sometimes believe that they cause good or bad things to happen, even if these events actually have nothing to do with them. Because of the black and white, polarized world that you lived in, you may have been made to feel that anything bad or good that happened was because of you, so you learned that trying to be good and achievement were key ways to ensure your safety and parental approval. You have to work to benefit others and you cannot be selfish. Your own needs and wishes are irrelevant, and if you think of yourself, you are selfish and self-centered. Do as I say, not as I do. Even so, your parents exhibited negative behavior, you were directed not to do the same. For example, if you drank as a teenager, your parents may have excessively criticized or punished you. Do not play or enjoy yourself. Your worth was based on always doing good deeds and performing well. You may have had the feelings that you could not let your guard down or else somebody bad would happen. Above everything else, avoid conflicts. Growing up in an alcoholic home may have taught you that conflicts would result in an unpredictable response from your parents. So you learned that it was better to avoid or escape from conflicts. Some parents may have also used conflict as an excuse to drink, so this may have led to a feeling of guilt if you felt that you caused your parents to drink. The limit and restriction that were placed on you may have caused you to adapt in ways that failed necessarily to ensure your survival and safety. As a child, you didn't have an option to make a different choice because you weren't developmentally able to do so. You were not given the chance to learn healthier behavior patterns and you were growing up, and this can ultimately harm your mental health. Let's talk about the codependency in alcoholic families. Codependency is common in people who grow up with addicted family members or in families who experience dysfunction for other reasons. Codependency refers to when a person has developed unhealthy behavior and coping skill in response to the mental effects of alcoholism and the pain of living with an alcoholic. Common codependent behavior and traits include caretaking, enmeshment, meaning there aren't clear boundaries in your relationship, the lack of a coherent identity, difficulty in recognizing what constitutes normal behavior in others, and excessive denials of the problem. A codependent person is often under the illusion that they are aiding the alcoholic through their helping behavior, but they are usually only perpetuating this addiction. An example of caretaking behavior might be calling in sick for your alcoholic spouse. You may think you're helping, but it actually only exacerbates the problem because the person doesn't have to take responsibility for their behavior, so they don't have to change. Another common issue is problems with setting boundaries with an alcoholic parents. You may find it hard to say no or feel like you have to help them anytime they ask, regardless of the impact it has on your life. What are common characteristics of children of alcoholics? Your family dynamic may have caused you to develop certain traits or adopt a particular role to survive your childhood's familial situation. Past researchers have written about stereotypic roles that children may unconsciously assume within an alcoholic family structure, including becoming a scapegoat, a rescuer, a hero, or a caregiver. These stereotypical roles, though not universally supported in the research, illustrate the potentially diverse developmental path that children may follow in response to the pressure and complexities of alcoholic home environment. For example, children of alcoholics that adopt personality traits akin to the stereotyped rescuer role may often feel the need to step in during times of crisis in their family and fix things. Similarly, a child of an alcoholic classified as a caregiver needs to make sure the parents' needs are met and the scapegoat takes the blame for anything that goes wrong. It's crucial to understand that these roles serve as simplifying expressions and children can exhibit a variety of these signs. One of the most common traits of children of alcoholic parents is a sense of hyper-responsibility, which means feeling responsible for things beyond your control, such as parents' happiness or drinking habits. Hyper-responsibility may develop especially if your other parent did not assume the role of adult caretaker in your family. On the other hand, others may develop a lack of responsibility if they felt that everything they tried within their family was ineffective at getting their needs met or changing their circumstances, leading to feelings of personal deficiency as what's the point mentality. Other common characteristics of adult children of alcoholic include being unable to trust yourself or others, hypervigilance in social interaction, feeling hypersensitive to comments from others, being worried in your personal communication, high achievement and perfectionism, prioritizing the needs of others above your own, using conflict avoidance techniques such as withdrawing physically or emotionally, feeling disconnected from your feelings of anger, being unable to express your feelings in appropriate ways, strong avoidance or escaping behavior, a diminished capacity to deal with negative emotion in others, all or nothing or black and white thinking, meaning you see people and circumstances as all good or all bad, creating crises when there aren't any, low self-esteem and a lack of self-worth, high tolerance for inappropriate or poor behavior in others. Children of alcoholics often have limited resources and are not taught proper ways of dealing with stressors. They are commonly left to their own devices, which can lead some to develop a sense of being a parentified child. This can be problematic as the child is only equipped to function at their developmental level. It shouldn't be the child's job to also be the parent. You didn't have a choice about this issue as a child, but it's important to realize that as an adult, you can now learn new behavior and choose differently. So now, let's talk about the society and relationship problems due to alcohol.
People can be aggressive due to the alcohol, and after that can be some quarrels and fights, and also beatings, I don't know, something like this. Because people, because of alcohol, can be more aggressive. And there's like, yeah, it's destroying the relationships.
It's 1% of the answer. What else?
One person?
Yeah.
Okay.
What else?
What else? Like,
so yeah,
but what else? What else? Tell me.
There are few things. The real world impact of alcohol abuse reaches far beyond the financial costs. When a loved one has a problem with alcohol, it can affect their marriage and their extended family. There are also the larger impact on the community, school, the workplace, the healthcare system, and on society as a whole. Let's talk about how alcoholism affects society. Approximately 14% of people in the United States will meet the criteria for severe alcohol use disorder in their lifetime, and alcohol is involved in more than 88,000 deaths per year. but it's not necessarily people who have alcohol addiction having the biggest impact on these figures. It's estimated that 77% of the cost of excessive alcohol consumption in the US is due to binge drinking, and most binge drinkers are not alcohol dependent. I want to talk about financial causes of alcoholism. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the cost of excessive alcohol use in the US alone reaches $249 billion annually. Around 77% of that is attributed to binge drinking, defined as 4 or more alcoholic beverages per occasion for women or 5 or more drinks per occasion for men. The CDC estimates that 40% of the cost of binge drinking is paid by federal, state, and local governments. The biggest cost is loss of workplace productivity. Healthcare costs, crimes, and law enforcement, as well as motor vehicle crash, and also among the top alcohol-related expenses. Also, not included in these figures are the work days that family members miss due to alcohol problems, a loved one.
The topic of children and alcoholism is very heavy because it can deal with actual children consuming alcohol, but also how they deal with it in their families. Is there a time when you were a teenager or children that you had to deal with something like this in your family or something else?
I tried alcohol only when I was 16. Just mojito, my father prepared for me. And before 18, I didn't try alcohol at all because in my family, I can say that it was forbidden, but my parents drank only on holidays, on some celebrations, and sometimes my father, he's Spanish, so he liked to drink wine with my mother's, but it was very rare. So during my childhood and also teen life, I didn't see how people drink alcohol. For me, it was something strange, because when we had the trips with my school, already kids who were younger than me, they drank a lot, like vodka, etc., and they didn't understand it at all. For me, it was like something strange. And then, like, when I got 18, I started to drink alcohol, but not a lot. We have celebration after the school, and I tried alcohol, but after that, I didn't drink alcohol for 1 year, and then, so for me, it was something not in my life at all.
Yeah, like in your family, for example, it was just on special occasions or from time to time.
So yeah. I didn't see my parents drunk, so for me, it was something special for celebrations, and I didn't know how people suffer from the alcohol, for example.
Mm. What about you, Thomas?
I've known someone really close to me that suffered from alcoholism. It's not in my family, but it was the mother of my best friend. So I've seen very early the damage that alcohol can cause. My best friend's mother was really aggressive, violent, angry. She was totally incoherent. My best friend really suffered from this. Yeah, so when I've seen that, I was really sure that I didn't want to be alcoholic, so I really be careful about that.
Nothing with your parents or someone in your family?
I mean, my grandparents drink a lot of wine, but I guess it's because they are French. But yeah, also my grandpa could be violent when he drank a lot, so that's why I preferred for me to stay calm. And I noticed very early that alcohol is not that good when you take it excessively.
Talking about grandparents, my grandmother, she didn't drink at all, but my grandfather, he liked vodka, like every day. Not a lot, but when I was a child, maybe 5 years or 6 years old, and when we came, like we went to Belarus, it was every time we were waiting for you, so let's drink vodka. Every time my mom was against it, but she needed, like, because of the tradition, you know, respect to the family. And my mother, not fan of the vodka, but he drank with my grandfather all the time. But it was a little, and I didn't see him violent, and he just went to sleep after that. And talking about my father, as I have mentioned, I haven't seen him drinking alcohol, but I know, as my mother said, that when he's drinking, he can be angry, and this is why he knows how to control himself, and he just drink a little bit, and This is why I haven't seen in my life he's violent or something like this. Just in Spanish manner to drink the wine, and this is all. But I think that talking about Russia, it's a very common situation. We have a lot of families where the parents are alcoholics. A lot of parents in Russia, they lose custody to the children because they start to drink a lot. There are a lot of cases when young girls, maybe 12, 13 years old, got the children. This is why they're sad. They start to drink, and a lot of cases for this. So it's like the big problem in Russia, I can say for sure. And we have a lot of centers for helping people with that. So, but unfortunately, I can say that little children can see it, how their parents are drinking, and it unfortunately can affect them in psychologic way and etc. And for us in the school, like my school was very calm in this plan, but I know that a lot of schools in Russia, like people, like pupils, they start to drink like from 10, etc., like vodka near their school, and it's like really big problem because alcohol is getting more and more popular. Except we have the restrictions that you can buy alcohol only after 18, but believe me, they will find the way how to buy it, to ask someone. So yes, it's like it's really big problem, and I think that in one way it's because that some parents are drinking a lot sometimes.
And you, Manuel, do you know someone in your family that drinks, or someone close from you?
Yeah. My father is alcoholic, so I think I've been fortunate that nothing really bad happened to me in regards of that. Like, there were some moments that were kind of dangerous. He would drive, you know, really fast and recklessly when he was drunk, because he would often, like, I would see him one weekend every 2 weeks because my parents are separated. And so every weekend I would go there, there was a moment where he would be drunk, so he would go to a friend's house and I would be with him because I was like 10, so I had to follow him everywhere. And then he would get drunk and drive home, that kind of thing. But he was never really violent too much with me. He got angry sometimes. There was one time where I was talking back at him because I was like 16, and he threatened to throw a glass at my face. So at that moment, like, my stepmother was like, I'm going to get you to your mother's because right now things are getting violent. But with me, nothing too much happened. But I know that it was the reason why my parents separated, because he drank too much and he got angry sometimes. Like, my mom told me that he slammed the door once, and there was a window on the door, and it broke because he slammed it too hard. And then my stepmother also left him because of this. And she told me a long time ago that she wanted to, and she took a long time to leave him. But I knew that he was very, you know, because of the alcohol, very sad and angry all the time. And he would never hit someone, but he would be very angry and yell really loud and be very scary, you know. So I know that this isn't really easy to live through, you know. Like, me, I was fine because I would see him only one weekend every 2 weeks. But I have a little brother that he had with my stepmother, and he suffered from that a lot more because he was there every time. So because of the alcohol, he would not spend time with him. He wouldn't, you know, take care of him too much. And my little brother would see all those behaviors as well. There's one thing that was really hard, that when she left him, he threatened to kill himself. It was just a threat. Like, there was no way that he was going to do it. But he did that in front of my brother as well, because he was completely drunk. Like, he would drink almost more than half of a bottle or a complete bottle of pastis or Ricard every day or something. And it was, he would go sometimes in the weekends, he would do work, you know, but off the books to make some more money. And there the clients would just, you know, give him a bottle of wine, that kind of thing. And he would drink that at home afterwards, you know. So on my mother's side, they, you know, like you, like your parents, they drink on special occasions, or maybe once a week in front of a movie, they're going to open a bottle of wine together and just, you know, not drink it, just drink a glass or two and then go to bed. It's really rare. Or sometimes they offer me a beer. So like once every 2 weeks in front of like a show that we watch together, we're going to drink a beer, and that's like, that's it. But I've seen them drunk at birthdays or that kind of thing, because they're very festive people, but that happens once every 3 months or something. So it's really more okay, let's say. But, you know, I don't think they have an alcohol problem like my father, but they still, you know, drink a lot when they're in social gatherings and stuff. So yeah, I completely agree with that. And I think I'm fortunate, you know, compared to my brother who, you know, he had to live with him for years, you know, like this. Now he's going to be in the same situation as me because they're separated as well. So he's only seeing him every 2 weekends or so, that kind of thing. So I know it's going to be hard. That's why I think, you know, it's a very important topic. I mean, we've joked about it a little when we were talking about the different alcohol and between the countries and stuff. But it was important also that we talked about these heavy topics because it's not really, like Thomas said, I've seen what it is to be with alcoholics. And although I drink a lot also when I'm at social gatherings, I almost never drink alone. Like maybe twice a year, I will open a beer in front of a movie, but it's like really twice a year. Or because I need something really fresh and it's the only thing I have in my fridge that's not water, for example, which is, like I said, twice a year. It's really rare. But I know that when I'm in parties and stuff, I tend to drink a lot. But I would hate myself if I lost control like that, so I try not to. So now, let's move away from this heavy topic and let's talk about... Samantha is going to tell us a bit more about what kind of alcohol are the most likely to lead to addiction. Samantha?
It's very interesting to discuss which form of alcohol is the most addictive. Alcohol is one of the most consumed substances on Earth. Did you know about it? There are over 10 million alcoholics in America alone. Alcohol is just as addictive as any other type of substance, and it doesn't matter where you start out drinking. A lot of people who drink become addicted to alcohol. There are a variety of alcoholic drinks in the market today, beers, wines, and liqueurs. In the past, the alcohol content in each of these different drinks was much lower than today. However, in most cases, the higher the alcohol content, the more addictive it becomes. There are some of the most addictive forms of alcohol on the market. How do you think, guys, what is the most addictive alcohol?
Is it wine?
No, it's whiskey. So, whiskey. The most addictive liquor on the market today is bourbon whiskey. Bourbon does contain a high amount of alcohol per serving. However, the alcoholic drink's specific taste and smell combined with its secret aging process make it extremely addictive. The second one is vodka. The most addictive liquor on the market today, also the vodka, will over 100 million people in the USA drinking vodka. And this alcoholic drink is obviously very popular. How does this alcoholic drink's potency compare to other liquors? Vodka is much stronger than whiskey and bourbon. It contains 40% alcohol per serving, so it's more potent than either of those beverages. And vodka is also much easier to become addicted to than any other drink. And also beer. Beer is another hot alcoholic drink on the market today. Even America's founding fathers enjoyed a nice cold beer every now and then. Beer contains a relatively low amount of alcohol per serving, only approximately 5%. And it is also much more affordable than other liquors. Wine is another hot alcoholic drink available in almost every liquor store and bar in America and other countries. Although wine has a low alcohol content per serving of approximately 12% and it's not as strong as other forms of liquor, wine is still very potent and easy to become addicted in the most cases. Individuals get addicted to it easily because of its mild taste and relative low cost. Wine is also readily available almost anywhere in every country. As I know, in France, you can buy wine from 16. Is it right?
No.
No, it's in Germany that you can buy wine and beer since 16. But in France, 18 minimum.
People drink it because they enjoy wine, but alcohol is a cause of many problems and concerns in all countries in this world.
Thank you, Samantha, for the useful information. There is so much data that you can find on alcoholism, alcohol consumption, the different habits in different cultures. But we've seen here in a very summarized way because we've found a lot of articles and a lot of studies talking about the links between culture and addiction and alcohol consumption and the problems of alcoholism in general, that we can only tell you that you should be careful and aware of the many dangers that it faces, because although we individually and in private have this very fun and light view on alcohol, it actually has much deeper and harder consequences that we don't necessarily think about. And that's what we saw when we met a lot of foreigners last week. So we thought it was very interesting to talk about, and I hope you found it interesting as well. And we advise you to look for more information if you are missing something, if you want to get more interested in it, because you can also learn a lot about your own behavior by looking at how other people behave in other cultures and the different common problems and behaviors. So this can also tell you a lot about yourself and maybe what you need to do for yourself if you think that you are suffering from alcoholism and you didn't know, or even if you are worried about this, because it's a very important topic. Thank you for listening, and see you on the next podcast.
Goodbye.